to you. So without further ado, please welcome John Kay.
How y'all doing? All right. Yeah, I'm tall. I'm John Kelly. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September the 4th, 1999, and for that I am very, very grateful. And I ain't one of these dudes that walk around and go, oh, I got me a sweet little car, God is so good. Oh, I got me a hot little girlfriend, God is so good. I got me a cool job, God is... God don't want to hear that from me. God wants to see me in action. So what better way for me to show the God of my understanding, my gratitude, is to get off my butt and take this program to somebody that was dying just like I was. That's how I show God my gratitude, and for that I'm very, very grateful. And I'm free. Thanks for having me out here. Chris was gracious. I was like, dude, I got to go change. He's like, change? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I got to suit up and all that. He's like, oh... I'm glad, because y'all about give me IVs and stuff up here, because I'll get ranting and raving, and you know how that goes. I'm from Primary Purpose Group in Dallas, as Myers-Raymer calls it, the home of the big book dumper. I didn't start out this way. Just a little bit about myself, and I love my group, and I love what we do, and we'll get to that towards the end of my talk. I'm grateful to this place for asking me to come and share with you guys and gals, because I am a complete knucklehead left to my own devices. I am that guy in Alcoholics Anonymous that people looked at in Dallas in the late 90s and said, that guy's gonna die. My family was done with me, treatment centers were done with me, Parkland Hospital never wants to see me again. I'll get to that in a minute. They were done. And I was destined to die drunk. But it didn't start out that way. So I'm the first kid on my mom's side. I was the first grandkid. So like when I hit the ground running, man, you'd have thought I could do no wrong when I was a little kid, man. I had, you know, I'm the best clothes, the best shoes, you know, on paper, I look like a pretty sharp kid growing up, right? There's two sets of twins below me. They bond. They get it. You know, I'm like the test kid, you know. And my mom remarried and got the stepdad. And the stepdad was super cool. And everything was kind of clicking along. But I always had this like this little nagging in the back of my head. Like all of you could tell me how great I am. But I still got the voice in my head going, you suck. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I played every sport. I was good at all of them. And I couldn't connect the dots. I always felt out of place. And I don't know why. I mean, it's just part of my story. It's the way I felt growing up. When we moved to Miami, Florida, I'm like 15 years old. I'm at a tennis camp. I'm getting ranked, playing tournaments all over the place. I'm at this little tennis camp. We had a free night before other people from all over the world came for 2 weeks. And it was me, another little boy that's 15 from New York, and three older women. They were like 17. And we had a free night, and the girls decided it'd be really cool if we had some beer. Now, I should back up a little bit. There's no immediate drinking in my family, right? I was always warned, like Bill says, despite the warnings and prejudices of my people concerning drink, right? I had those people in my distant family, but not in my immediate family. My mom and stepdad didn't drink. I mean, they might have a margarita here and there, but no drunkenness. We had the drunks on the side of the family, right? I always heard the story about Uncle Melvin. And Uncle Melvin was a world-class polo player, stole all my great-granddad's cattle for booze and gambling, and he drank himself to death, died on the front porch of a gastric hemorrhage, right? Don't be like Uncle Melvin. So here I am at tennis camp. These girls want beer. I don't have a car. I don't have a driver's license. I immediately said, we'll get the beer, you know? And so we ran like 2 miles uphill both ways to this little convenience store. I put a case of Budweiser on the counter, and the guy looked at me like my head was on fire. And I pleaded my case, hey, we're back at Harry Hopman Tennis Camp. Got three little hotties back at the crib. He said, meet me out back. I went out back. I gave him a $20 bill. He gave me a case of Budweiser, and we ran it all the way back to tennis camp, put it in the bathtub, covered it up with ice, called the girls. And the girls came, and we started drinking the Budweisers. And I don't know if it was the first Budweiser or the second Budweiser, but suddenly, I had arrived. All of a sudden, all the dots were connected. You know what I'm saying? I had answers to questions that hadn't even been asked, man. It was magical. I dug it. Last thing I remember, seeing a little pair of 17-year-old boobies, and that was it. But I couldn't wait to do it again. And from the time I was 15 until I was like 25, alcohol was the best thing that happened to me. It worked. I mean, I can tell you some tragic stories after I'm 25, but from those 10 years, 10 or 11 years, alcohol was the best thing in my life. And I did lots of outside issues too. You know, I was the guy in high school in Plano. I learned how to forge documents, so I forged everybody's licenses, and so we're underage going to all the clubs in Dallas, and I was that guy, you know. And all my outside issue stories worked out. You know, early on in my sobriety, they asked me to speak at CA a bunch, and I'm like, dude, my cocaine stories ended up well, you know. I scored, I got lucky, end of story, you know. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So fast forward through all these years, and I wasn't a knucklehead from the beginning. I know lots of people get into trouble, but for the first 10 or 11 years, alcohol just worked. It made a crappy day better, and it made a great day or a good day better. It was magical. And then the screws start to turn. You know, I'm in and out of colleges, accepted to UT, ended up going to Cal Berkeley, ended up going from there to Baylor in 1 year. Berkeley to Baylor. Berkeley to Jerusalem on the Brazos. Quite a culture shock. And I'm just like hopping around because it's always better over there, you know? And I'd work my butt off to get in over here and get that girl and get it all straightened up. And as soon as I got it, I'm like, that ain't so good. And I don't know what I was chasing, but it never worked. And the alcohol just progressed and progressed and progressed. And, you know, finally I'm starting to lose some friends. My family's getting on me over and over and over. Chill out. Do all this stuff. And it was in 1988. It was during the Summer Olympics, I think. It's not going well. I'm in between colleges. I'm going to go back to Texas Tech. The girlfriend and I are split up. It's not working out well for me. And I have this epiphany. Maybe I need treatment. So I went to my first treatment center. I called my mom. You would have thought I won Powerball. You know, oh, hallelujah, come to the house, we'll get you in, blah, blah, blah. And so they get me into one of those nice treatment centers that good insurances can get you into, you know, like, you know, the $30,000 big book, you know. They have tennis courts and seaweed wraps and all the chicks still have all their teeth. And it was a good treatment center, you know. And so I went there, and it's the first time I got exposed to the big book, and I remember them asking us to read Bill's story, and I didn't get it. I'm not like Bill at that time. I remember my roommate at the time, it was his day, when I came out of detox, it was his day to tell his story to the group on how he got, what his sad story was, and he was like 40-something years old, and I remember listening to his story, I'm like, man, this guy is a train wreck. He needs to be here. Little did I know that his story, compared to my story in 99, I made him look like a Cub Scout. Wasn't that bad yet. And I got out. I started going to the local AAs in Dallas. I got a little 30-day chip. And I don't know how y'all do it down here. I don't know how it rolls down here. But in Dallas, you know, I don't like speaking in front of people. You know, I mean, it's just, I don't like crowds. People freak me out. And I remember going to, like, my sponsor at the time would go to this big fancy pants meeting in Dallas, and at 6 o'clock there'd be 100, 150 people there, and the chairperson would open up the meeting, and then he would think of a topic, and then cruelly and maliciously he would go around the room and pick on people to talk, and I hated every second of it. I hated every second of it. And I stayed as long as I could stay, and then I'd just go do my own thing, and of course I start drinking again. And then it just continues to spiral. You know, what I thought was bad keeps getting worse. I was working at Hard Rock Cafe in Dallas. I was one of the old timers there, and Started out as a waiter, head waiter, bartender, management. Gonna go to corporate management. I can't stay sober a lick. I got buddies in bands all over town. I'm just living the high life. Cannot stay sober. You know, and I'm with knuckleheads all the time. And so I got asked to leave. And I made a firm resolution there. I think that was in 92. I ain't doing this anymore. And I started running 10 miles a day again and doing push-ups, reading Tony Robbins, doing Tai Chi. All, I got Way of the Peaceful Warrior. I'm reading that, you know. I mean, all kinds of happy crap. And I'm going to show these guys at Hard Rock that I mean business, right? I'm going to start my own restaurant, man. And I get it all set up. I'm going to show them that I am somebody. And I'm working my butt off. My girlfriend and I are cool. I'm not drinking a lick. 2 days before I get the restaurant, the thought crosses my mind that a shot of Sambuca would be nice. And there'd been a bottle of Sambuca in my in the freezer for about 2 months. And I poured me a shot of Sambuca. I'm working on my documents and stuff. I drink that shot of Sambuca. And the next thing you know, I drink a fifth of Sambuca. I call my buddies at the liquor store. They brought some more on the way home. I went on an 8 or 9 day blackout, didn't get the restaurant, did not pass go, and ended up in Puerto Rico. I don't know if y'all ever been to Puerto Rico. It's pretty awesome. Girls are pretty. They are pretty. And there seems to be more girls than guys. Rum is very, very cheap. I don't like rum, but it's cheap. And outside issues are very, very pure. And I had money in the bank, and I didn't have any checks and balances, and I did what I did. I went for a little vacation and stayed a long time. And it was ugly. Ugly. I mean, I crossed that other line, man. I can't put it down. I cannot. And my buddy, we're like brothers, you know, and I'm staying with him, and he's just watching me spiral out of control, and he was going to St. Thomas with his girlfriend, and I said, hey, when you guys get back, I'll be sober. I'm done. And I kicked. It was on a Sunday, and it was awful. Monday, I could barely walk. If I drank a sip of water, it came back up. I'm dry heaving, that yellow bile. I mean, just is awful. Tuesday wasn't much better. Wednesday, I kind of turned the corner. I'm shaking and vibrating and everything, and I remember sitting in the house by myself, the windows open. You can hear the waves crashing from the Atlantic Ocean. It's majestic. And I start to hear the voices. And I went on a 4-day delirium tremens run. People that knew me saw me walking around Old San Juan with a pair of Nike running shorts on, barefoot with a butcher knife sticking out of the back, just mumbling to myself. Well, they gave me wide berth. I was called the Loco Gringo, or the Crazy Gringo, for a reason, man. And that was my first trip to AA there on that Saturday night. And that's the first night. I kind of skipped over a lot of AAs because I was in and out of AA for a lot of these years. And here's my impression of AA, what it was like. All right? Whether it's right or wrong, this was my impression. Walk into a place anywhere in Dallas, and there'd be some cranky, mean, miserable SOB. I'm just glad to be sober today. And I'd go in and I'd hear about your crappy divorce, and I'd hear about Chris's cat peeing on the carpet one more time. And I'm thinking, you guys are friggin' nuts, because I can be miserable on my own. And I go into this place in San Juan, and this dude is on fire, Andy Aponte. And he took me under his wing. I think he lost the bet. But he took me under his wing, and he's like the first guy in AA that I saw that was like on fire with this deal. And he's reading the big book to me, and we're trying to do it. He's trying to help me out. And I'm starting to feel the power, you know. And I get it, and I remember him calling me. I was going to get a 60-day chip. Not a cloud on the horizon, all right? He calls me and says, you're coming tonight, right? And I said, absolutely, brother. I just got home. I'm going to take a shower. I'll be across the bridge in a few minutes. He's like, cool, because we're all going out to dinner. You get your chip. It's going to be great, okay? Walking to the bus stop to catch the bus to go across the bridge to Condado, I hear, Mira, JK. And I look, and it's two girls that I know. They were artists. dance artists. And they were sitting at a little outside thing, and I stopped to say hello. And the next thing you know is like 6 days later, blackout. My buddy had to call my mom and said, you need to get him off this island. He's going to die here. So she sent him a ticket. She didn't trust me with the money. Go figure. And I flew back to Texas with the explicit instructions, please don't be drunk when I pick you up at the airport. So what does a good alcoholic do? Hell yeah. So they poured me off the plane. And now, you know, because you got like the little disco drunks on the plane, and they got their little John Grisham novel, and they order like a vodka and seven, and it comes in like those little bottles, you know, that an Al-Anon designed for sure, right? And so they get it, and they pour the little thing, and then they stir it, and they read their book and everything. Meanwhile, I got the flight attendant, I'm like, we got a 3-hour flight, here's $50. I need as much booze as you can get to me. Right? Every trip go by, you drop me off something, you know? So now here I'm 30-something years old, no good clothes, no good car, no friends, living with my mom, spending her money, driving her car, trying to get sober. And I'm going to, she lived up north of Denton, and I'm going to this little group there, and I made another beginning. And we had this girl there, that everybody wanted this girl. She was like a couple years older than me. Everybody wanted this girl. I got Debbie. And we started going to meetings together and dances together and walking these steps together. I had a little big book dumper for a sponsor, and the goose hung high for about 9 months. And it was right before Christmas. She didn't want to play ball no more, and I'm screwed. And it's like 2 days before Christmas, I believe. And I went to Gainesville, Texas, where my mom was outside of, and went to a little AA meeting there 2 days before Christmas. And there's some good old-timers there. I mean, cats with like 30, 40 years. I mean, I've been to that group a bunch. There's some solid guys there. Now, all little JK has to do is go up to Chris and say, hey, can I talk to you? My butt's in a sling. But I don't do that because I'm a guy. How you doing? I'm great. And I remember sitting at that meeting, they kicked off the meeting, and since it was because Christmas, whoever the chairperson was thought it'd be a great idea to have a gratitude meeting. I don't know if they do those down here. And everybody's going around the horn talking about how friggin' grateful they are, and Jim Bob over here is grateful that Jim Bob Jr.'s in from Podunk, Oklahoma, when he's got 30 days, and ain't God glorious. And I'm dying. And I remember getting up and going to the bathroom and washing my hands and looking at my watch, and it was like 8:43. And I hauled ass to the liquor store. And I ain't a disco drunk. I don't get a pint and try, no. I get the 1.75 of Skol Vodka, pop out that little plastic governor they got in the top, and I drink. I ain't cutting it with nothing. I ain't pouring it into a glass. It comes in a bottle. And I drink. And so my mama came home on Christmas Eve to find me blacked out drunk. I did that the next two Christmases. Now my family's done with me. I've got a crash in Plano with an uncle. That's my first trip to Homeward Bound. It's a little busted up treatment center in South Dallas. And I made it through 90 days there. Got a little big book thumper for a sponsor. Made a good beginning, living at a halfway house. Got a little job. I'm catching the bus to the train to work, reverse the process, get cleaned up, have some supper, make it to the local AA endlessly for like 2 months, right? A little hamster wheel. None of the guys in the house were doing any step work. They weren't doing crap. They were hitting me up for money. Got a couple grand in the bank, never been to jail. It's a beautiful spring day during the basketball tournament. I'm going to catch the bus to the train to get to Lower Greenville because I need a place to live and get out from under this. It's before I ever had a cell phone, so I'm using the payphone inside this local establishment. I'm making calls, trying to get an apartment, having some tacos, drinking a Coke. There's a tap on my shoulder. It's one of my Hard Rock Cafe buddies. He's like, I thought you were dead. I'm like, I'm here. A few minutes later, he comes by with a beer and a shot of Rumpelmans. The bartender estimated I had at least 17 shots of Rumplemans. And that wasn't my only bar that I went to that day. The next thing I remember was coming to handcuffed to a bed in Parkland Hospital with a felony possession, public intox, and assaulting a police officer. And I was out looking for an apartment. I pleaded with God all in loose stare. God, you get me out of this, I'll do anything. You get me out of this, I'll do anything. I got money in the bank. I know some hot shit attorneys. I will make this happen. I will call Frank. I will get this squared away. Just get me out of here unscathed. And on Monday evening, I got bonded out. I got my little backpack from them, and I'm walking out of Lucerne. I looked at my watch, and it's like 8:45. I walked straight across the street to Elmer's and got a fifth of vodka because I got a drink. I end up in Homeward Bound in 98 one more time. I almost die in their detox, literally. I was going through DTs and seizures. It was awful. And I almost died. I told them I would stay for the 30-day deal. I'm in bad shape, bad, bad physical shape. It was on a Friday. I'm coming out of detox. I'm still in scrubs. Guys are having to hold me up to shuttle me down the hall to take me outside. They were having a smoke break. And by the time they wheeled me out there, they're like, gentlemen, let's go inside. We got group. And I'm just like, it's a whirlwind, you know? And I lean over to this guy and I said, what kind of group do you have on Friday night? He's like, oh, we got AA. And I was like, crap. I mean, I've been to 270 meetings in AA in a row. They told me 90 and 90. I did three a day for 90 days. Day 91. I'm looking for a tall building and a rifle. This ain't working out. And so I was not thrilled that there was an AA meeting. And they put me in the corner of this room so I couldn't fall out of my chair. And Myers Raymer and Cliff Bishop from Primary Purpose Group came in there. And Cliff started talking, and he's frothing at the mouth. The guy never, he was like 80-something years old. The guy never opened his big book. He's just rattling off page. Go here, turn here, do this, do that. And he's blowing my mind. Then Myers gets up there, and Myers does what he does, and he's blowing my mind. And I have never heard that crap before. And I'm like fired up. And the old man there had one of his proteges there. That guy became my sponsor, and I made a good beginning. One of my brothers has let me crash on his sofa in Plano. I got a little job in the design district. I'm going to Primary Purpose Group. They're trying to feed it to me. I am thousands of dollars in debt. Debbie has not come back. None of my friends will talk to me. I got nothing, and it's weighing on me. Now, all I got to do is tell Matthew I need some help here, but I don't do that. On a Thursday night, about 60 days sober, I had the audacity to tell him, after the meeting, I'm going to go make an amends to this girl over here. And I did the Lord's Prayer, put up a couple chairs, went straight to the liquor store, and do what I do, because I'm miserable. In January, February of 99, I was in six emergency rooms in Dallas, alcohol-related. Parkland Hospital never wants to see me again. They get a little pissy if you bump to the front of the line complaining of chest pains while I'm trying to detox from alcohol, working them for meds. I had planned accordingly because I'd done the trip before. I had poured vodka into an Evian bottle, hooked up to their IVs in emergency room while they're running all these battery tests on me, and the doctor catches me drinking vodka. They never want to see me again. And I don't go back to Primary Purpose. You know, that ego and that arrogance. So I go back to that fancy pants group and this fancy pants group. And those people, they're not even clapping anymore. I think he's been drinking. You know? And I couldn't stay sober. And somewhere in the summer of 99... I got this little job in the design district. I'm in all the fancy pants houses of Dallas, if they only knew, hanging artwork and doing all that stuff, if they only knew. But they took pity on me. They never fired me. I was a drunken idiot. So I never went to work on Mondays. And so it was in the end of July, so I didn't go to work on a Monday. I tried to taper. See, I try to taper on Sundays, and I shoot the marks. So here it is Monday. I'm not at work, so I'm trying to taper through the day to get away to the shakes so I can go to work on Tuesday. I'm a very bad taperer. So I overshoot the mark. I got to call in sick on Tuesday. That's wearing thin. I tried to taper all day Tuesday. Had to call in sick on Wednesday. My boss starts giving me the business. And I'm like, you know what? F you. F you, your little company. I'm done. And I just got my very first cell phone. They had scaled down. It wasn't the big suitcase model. It was one of those. I remember throwing it on the ground and just started crying. Because I had been pleading these months, pleading with God, don't let it happen today. I can't friggin' take it. And now I'm done. And I remember crying, hitting my knees and crying and saying this pathetic alcoholic prayer, you know, like, you know, God, maybe I'm just one of these guys that aren't going to get it. And I'm okay with it. Let me friggin' die. And the only time I left my little garage apartment where I was staying, the only time I left for the rest of the summer was to get down to Industrial Boulevard to get as many of those plastic bottles of Skol Vodka that I could carry in the shape that I was in, get back to my house, lock the door, and guzzle. Because I knew from my medical records, I'm like that close to dying. And I'm relentless. And it's just blackout after blackout. I don't know what's going on. Friday of Labor Day weekend, I came to. I'm covered in blood, and I haven't been stabbed. That's just me. My house smells like death, and that's just me. And I've got vodka everywhere, and now I have this epiphany, like, I don't want to die drunk. And I don't know what to do. And I don't remember this, but I apparently called one of my other brothers. Now, check this out. I don't know if any of y'all are the oldest. I'm the oldest, right? Two sets of twins below me. I taught them stuff, you know? Taught them, helped them ride bikes, how to play sports. They look up to their older brothers or older sister, right? So my brother Joel, he's in Fort Worth getting his master's in theology at seminary. So Joel gets to come pick my dumb ass up, and I'm like 30 or 40 pounds underweight, dying of malnutrition and alcoholism. And he's like, brother, we got to get you to the hospital. I'm like, dude, they won't take me. He's like, it's Parkland. They got to take you. I said, they ain't going to take me. He's like, well, what do I do? And I said, it's just if I go into seizures or start babbling, call the ambulance. And so he took me over to his house in Fort Worth, and that was the last detox. I'm not advising this. You can die from drinking like I can, and you can die from detox. All right? You can die during delirium treatment. Your heart literally explodes. But that last detox, I just wrote it out, and it was awful. I tried to make a break for it on Saturday night. I could barely walk, but I knew there was a liquor store like three blocks away. I have $21 in my bank account. That's it. I'm 35 years old. So I told Joel I was going to go back there and sleep and everything, and I went out to the backyard, and I was going to make a run for it. I got to the back fence. The back fence was locked, and it was about, it might as well have been 100 feet tall, because in the shape I was in, I wasn't scaling it, and I'm just like, screwed. And I didn't drink, and over that weekend, I mean, it was awful, because my brain is screaming for vodka. My brain is telling me, dude, get vodka, you're gonna die. Over that weekend, my boss, who I so shockingly treated, had left me a voicemail saying, hey, the owners are in Europe. We got a project that came in your absence. You're the only one that can pull this off. We estimate it'll take 2 to 3 weeks to do it. On Tuesday after Labor Day, will you please come back to the office, work on this project, you bill us for what you need to bill us for, and we will pay you gladly, and then we never want to see you again. And being that I had $21 to my name and I'm shaking out booze, I thought, this is a great idea. So I go back that Tuesday. My brain is telling me, drink, drink. Matthew, meanwhile, from Primary Purposes, calling me throughout the day, you're coming to the meeting. Now I'm like, I'm coming to the meeting, dude. I'm coming to the meeting. At 5:30, he calls me. He says, you're going to the meeting. I said, yeah, I'm getting ready to go home. He said, don't go home. Get you something to drink. Just go straight to the meeting. I got a change of plans. Rachel's having a baby, going into labor. We're going to the hospital. Talk to Cliff. And I'm like, great. For the first time in my life, I just followed direction. I went and got a big gulp, got to the meeting, walk into that little church. Cliff's on the other side of the meeting room. He sees me walk in the door. I'm in my work clothes. I smell, right? You know how we smell when we're detoxing off booze and all that stuff? I'm shaky, you know, and how we walk. You just kind of, hey, you know, you're just kind of just jitter. I mean, I'm a wreck. Brain screaming for booze. And Cliff sees me and makes a beeline towards me. Of course, I got to be the tough guy, right? He comes up to me, starts giving me a hug. And I said, I'm supposed to talk to you. And he kind of looks at me over the top of his glasses like your grandpa means when he means business, you know? And he says, what the hell can I do for you? And by now I'm starting to get choked up and I'm like, I don't want to die drunk. And he said, follow me. And we went to this little side room, this little parlor room in the church, and he sat me down before the meeting, right? And he starts asking me some questions about me. He starts telling me some stuff about him, right? I'd heard his story before, but he's asking me questions, pumping me for answers. He's telling me some stuff of him. We're identifying, right? Back and forth, right? On paper, on the outside, I got nothing in common with this guy. He's 80-something years old, except he's drank as much or more booze than I ever dreamed of, and he's 80 and free, and I'm 35 and dying. And he finally gets me right where he needs to get me. Are you an alcoholic? And by then, I'm snotting and crying. Yes, sir, I'm an alcoholic. And he says, you're effed. Look at you. You're going to die drunk, dude. He wasn't trying to scare me. It's the truth. He said, do you think it works for me? I'm like, well, yeah, I know it works for you. Well, does it work for Myers, Dara, Ed? Well, yeah, damn right it does. If it didn't work, they'd be playing bingo in this church tonight. How well is your way working? It's not. Great. I'm now your sponsor. And I was like in my head going, oh, crap. Matthew's like this so nice and mild-mannered, and now I got this mean guy. He goes, I'm now your sponsor. And you're going to read what I tell you to read, go where I tell you to go, do what I tell you to do, which is in the first 164 pages of this book. And the minute you balk, go away. There's 1,500 other meetings in Dallas, and I'm sure you can find one that'll do it your way. And I said, yes, sir. He says, when you get home tonight, I want you to start reading some stuff. He told me doctor's opinion and Bill's story, I think. He says, when you get ready to go to bed, I need you to look up at your ceiling and just say, thank you for giving me another chance. I said, okay, I'll do that. He said, let's go get your chip. And that's when I got my last desire chip, September the 4th, 1999. And I got through that meeting, and I got home, and I got cleaned up. I was supposed to call my saint and mom. And I called her, and she's like, did you make it to the meeting? I'm like, I made it to the meeting. Was Matthew there? And I said, no, Matthew was not there. She knew who Matthew was. And you could hear her hopes drop. And I said, no, Matthew's wife's having a baby, but it's okay. I got another sponsor. She says, who's your sponsor? And I said, Cliff Bishop. She started crying, and I said, why are you crying? She says, because I've been praying. And I said, well, I'm kind of scared of the old man, and I got some stuff to read, and I have to say a prayer to my ceiling. Don't ask. I'm cool. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I got cleaned up, and I did what he told me to read, and I got ready to go, and I'm sleeping on this dirty little sofa because I didn't have a bed, and I'm sleeping on this little sofa in this garage apartment. And right before I'm going to lay down to go to sleep, I hit my knees and I looked up at my ceiling and I just told God, thank you for giving me another chance. And I remember laying down on that sofa, and as I'm laying there for a minute or two, the thought crosses my mind of, dude, we don't got to drink no more. And I don't know where that came from. And I got up the next day and I called the old man and he asked me what I read. We talked about it a little bit. He said, I'm speaking at Casa Group tonight at 7 o'clock. Be there at 6:30. Click. Didn't ask if it was on my way, if I had time in my busy little social schedule, just be there. I got there early, like he said. He didn't even talk to me until after the meeting. We went over Bill's story again. He gave me some more stuff to read. I called him the next day, Thursday, so we're going to my meeting that night, because we only meet Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays at Primary Purpose. Absolutely impossible to do 90 meetings in 90 days at Primary Purpose Group, because we don't meet every day. So I called him that Thursday, my second meeting. He says, on your way to the meeting, I need you to stop by Salvation Army and pick up Manny, Mo, and Jack. Get them to our meeting. Make sure you get them back to Salvation Army after the meeting so they don't miss curfew. Click. I don't know if you've ever been to Salvation Army in Dallas. It's a little sketchy, to say the least, right? So here I am pulling up in my beater of a car. I just see three dudes sitting there. I'm like, come on. We're going to AA, buddy. They were the right guys, fortunately. So I'm sitting there in that meeting. I should have brought my other book, because I still have my book that I got sold with. So I'm sitting there in that meeting. We just do big book studies in my group. Tuesdays and Thursdays are big book studies, right? Saturdays are step speakers, right? That's the way we roll. The rest of the time, we're out in the community carrying the message, right? So I got my brand new little big book. We're on page 46, and it says, we found that as soon as we're able to lay aside prejudice, express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results, right? So here I am with my new little big book. I'm underlining it. All these little old-timers are talking about it, right? And I'm catching it. And all of a sudden, it connects the dots, right? All of a sudden, I think about laying on the sofa. I don't got a drink no more. I got a little bit of hope, right? And I'm like leaning to my buddy, Kurt. And I'm like, dude, this is like real. He's like, hello, I know. And I'm like hook, line, and sinker at this point. That Saturday, I went over to the old man's house, and we went over steps 1, 2, and 3, right? He made sure all my little ducks in a row. And he says, you ready to do this deal? I said, buddy, I'll do anything. And he said, we'll see about that. Follow me. I followed him into another part of his house. He opened the big book to page 63. We got on our knees. He says, before you do your third step prayer, I'm going to say a prayer. Make sure God's with us. And I bowed my head on my knees with the old man. He starts praying. I got no idea what he's saying, because in my head, I'm praying my butt off, because I got to get sober now. And I guess there was some silence, and he says, I need to hear what you're saying to God. And this is what I said. I said, God, I've tried to get sober since 88, and I'm scared, and I don't want to die drunk. I need your help. Please give me the willingness to do whatever I got to do to get what's in this book. Amen. He said, stand up. I thought I'd screwed up, you know? I stood up, and he gave me a hug, and he said, you just did the third step prayer. I used my own words, right? I voiced it without any reservation. The holy trinity for an alcoholic drunk, the job, the curl, the car, the girl, wasn't going to fix it. Winning Powerball wasn't going to fix it. I was screwed. I was desperate. I surrendered, and I asked the power for help. Step 3 is done. He said, follow me. If you look on page, if you got a big book, on page 63, it says, when we sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We have a new employer. Now, there's a cool concept for God, right? The employer. God is the employer. What does that make me? The FNG, right? New guy, right? If I'm the new guy, what do I got to do? I got to show up, right? I got to be there on time. I got to bust my butt. I got to clock out on time. I got to do whatever is asked if I'm expected to get through the probationary period and get a 401k and get dental and health and all that stuff, right? I got a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. Cliff said, God is either everything or else he's nothing. What's your choice to be? And I said, well, God is everything. He said, John, if God is everything and he is providing you with what you need, what else do you need? I'm like, nothing. He says, that's pretty simple, ain't it? I'm like, yeah, cool. He says, underline it. This is your job description till the day you die. He provided what we needed if we keep close to him and perform his work well today. So fast forward 17 years now. What's my job description? Stay close to God. Do this work today. No matter what happens. That is my job. I do my job, I get everything I need. That's pretty simple. My job is to do my job. All that other stuff ain't my job. What you do ain't my job. My job is to do my job. And screw what I did yesterday. And screw what I got plans to do tomorrow, I got today. When I lay my head down tonight, I need to be able to ask myself the question, have I paid the price to stay sober today? I drank. I'm an in-the-gutter, worthless drunk left to my own devices. I'm not some friggin' disco drunk who gets a DWI and thinks he's got a friggin' problem. I burn it to the ground. I annihilate every relationship in my midst. My sobriety is no different. Doesn't matter if that guy over here at the local AA group got sent to La Hacienda and got a $30,000 big book, and he made it to the local AA, and he's never cracked open the big book, and he didn't want to lose the business, and he didn't want to lose the pretty wife and the pretty kids and half of his assets, and he don't ever have to take a step. Doesn't matter what he does. I ain't that guy. I drink no matter what. We marched back into his little office. I did the third set prayer. He gave me my instructions for my fourth step. The big book, it tells you in the preface that this is a textbook, right? This is a textbook. So with a textbook, you study it, right? You read John Grisham novels. Pass it off to your friend, maybe, right? A textbook, we study it. Like in first grade math class, you know? They pass that little math book, right? Unless you were a friggin' genius, you didn't go to the end of the book and start doing division. Each chapter builds upon the previous chapter, right? First, we got to learn how to add. Then we learn how to subtract. And then we're going to multiply. Then we're going to do division. Each chapter gives us a problem. They're going to give us the solution. And they're going to tell us how to get from the problem to the solution. This is a textbook. Right? In the fourth to the first edition, it says they're going to give us precise instructions on how to recover. Precise. What is precise? I mean, that's why they wrote the book. For cats like you and me, who are desperate and dying, they wrote down the instructions. The only place on God's green earth where there's instructions on how to take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous is in this book and in this book only. Now, I'm not discouraging the other books. I got them all, read them all. They're great. This is the only one with instructions. The big book tells me how to take the steps, when to take the steps, with whom to take the steps. It gives me prayers, promises, consequences all the way through. If I read this book and I get a little hope and I want to get what they got, I got to do what they do. So he gave me my instructions. At the bottom of page 63 tells me exactly when I'm supposed to start my fourth step. It says, next we launch on a course of vigorous action. Next. Not next week. Not next month, next. Hug your sponsor, start writing. I felt great after doing my third step prayer. I'm in God's grace at this point. The clock is ticking. Page 24 says that within a week or a month, left to my own devices, the thought's going to come, I'm going to drink. My job is to get to the power that's going to save my life. I've already had my last drink. The clock's ticking. I got to figure out what's blocking me from the power. So from my third step on till the day I die, my actions this day show God how willing I am not to pick up a drink. Me sitting around thinking about my fourth step shows God nothing. Me sitting around praying about my fourth step shows God nothing. I imagine God creating vast universes with the God paintbrush. And he hears me thinking about my fourth step. And God don't miss a beat. What God pays attention to is when I get on my knees and ask God for guidance and get out pen and paper and start writing. My actions show God I'm willing to go to any length not to pick up a drink. And we're going to do it just like the big book says. I'm going to do resentments, fears, and sex conduct, right? Get them on paper. Old school AA, they'd get you out of St. Thomas Hospital in Akron after 3, 4, 5 days of detox, go down to the Oxford group, say the prayer upstairs, they shove the pen and paper, you're right there, and said, start writing. And in one afternoon, you're basically what we know through the steps, one afternoon, right? If my solution is the power, why would my sponsor want to keep me from the power? My sponsor gave me 1 week to complete it, or else. And the or else for him is go away. And every day during that week while I'm working on my four step, I'd call the old man like I'm supposed to, and he'd let me say whatever drivel I needed to say, and he'd ask me, where are you at on your four step? Well, I'm done with my resentments. I'm working on fears. Great. Call me when you're done. The week is up. My four-step is done. I let him know on Saturday night at the meeting. He said, cool, be at my house tomorrow at 1. And I went over to his house with my four-step paperwork in tow. And I got to find out the truth about me. And the truth about me is I, who think so highly of myself, am actually like a real big jerk. I lie, cheat, con, steal, manipulate, annihilate anything to get my way. And if I got to be real, real nice and pay you a little compliment to get my way, I can do that. If that don't work, F you. I'm going to get what I need to get because it's going to make me happy. And look at all the damage that I created. And that sex conduct, it's not, they don't want to know how freaky deaky I am or not. This is irrelevant. How did you treat those little princesses? Not well. I lied, cheated, conned, stole, aroused jealousy, suspicion, bitterness. And I had some nice girlfriends back in the day, and I just destroyed them all. My fifth step wasn't that long. I don't remember how long it was, but it wasn't hours and hours and long, but it was humbling. You know, and I felt awful. I felt awful, and I remember we were all done with it all, and he asked me if I'd left anything out. I'm like, no, I'm good. And I remember driving back to my house. The Cowboys were playing. I didn't even turn the radio on, and I'm just driving in silence, and I feel terrible. And I got home, and I'm doing what the big book says. I'm quiet for an hour, and I'm reviewing what I've done. And it says, we ask if we've omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And I'm just like, God. And good John Kett, because I omitted something. You got to look up dictionary words sometime. Omit and forget are two different things. I was blacked out most of the 80s and 90s. I've forgotten lots of stuff. Omit is me leaving something out on purpose, and I omitted something. And I got good John Kelly in my head going, call Cliff. Bad John Kelly's like, nah, this is embarrassing. And I keep doing battle, and I don't know how many minutes went by, but I kept looking at that phrase in the big book, free man at last. And I remember I had a little black pen with me, and I put a box around the words free man. And I don't know where, and I kept looking at it and kept looking at it, and it just kind of like my little previous AA life is passing through my eyes. And I thought of all those 30-day chips and 60-day chips and all those times where I tried to stay sober the previous 11 years, whether it was for a week or a month or whatever. The one thing that I never, ever, ever was free. Because even when I wasn't drinking, booze owned me. Even when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. Even when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking, how am I going to get through the day without drinking? Booze owned me. And I picked up the phone and I called him. And he says, I've been expecting your call. And I was like, wow. He's like Yoda. You know, he knows everything. I found out that's a sponsor trick. You can do that to all your guys. He's like, what do you got? So I told him. I don't care sharing it now. It's no big deal. But back when I moved back from Puerto Rico, we lived out in the country with my mom, and I would try to, you know, I'm drinking on the side, and she had to go out of town on business and everything, and so I tried to pace myself through the booze. I ran out of booze. I didn't have any more booze. I didn't have a vehicle to get into town. It's like 20 miles away. So I drank lots and lots of rubbing alcohol. Take a little rubbing alcohol, get some of that reconstituted lemon juice in the refrigerator, make you a little isopropyl lemon drop. It sucks. And I was deeply ashamed about that. And he started laughing at me. He's like, well, GD, don't do that anymore. That'll kill you. I don't do that anymore, right? Start your hour over. I'm like, yes, sir. You know? So here I've done my four step and my fifth step. This is the stuff blocking me from the power that's going to save my life. Am I willing to let go of it? Right? 12 and 12 says, if you read Clarence Snyder's story, it says this separates the men from the boys. Because that's all I know left to my own devices. Am I willing to let go? I don't want my old life back. I'm all in. At this point, if you like Texas Hold'em, this is where you take your hands, get your chips, shove them all in. I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm done. And I did my seven-step prayer on my own that day and started on my eight-step list. So now I'm 12 days sober. And one Sunday afternoon, I did step five, step six, step seven, started on my eight-step list. And my life changed. That little boss that I so shockingly treated, it was on a Friday. I finished up this little job, so I had the weekend to prepare my invoices, how much I'm going to bill these suckers for. I'm sober, right? Because I went through Homeward Bound, Myers is doing the meeting there on Friday, so Cliff made me follow Myers, right? So I'm learning how to do the stuff what Myers does, right? And so I'm like 3 weeks sober, maybe 4 weeks sober, before my month, though. I know that. And so I finished this little project. It's on a Sunday. I got up in the morning, called Cliff. Everything's cool. Went up to Homeward Bound, dropped off some little red books, talked to some guys, get home, start working out how much I'm going to bill these guys. Now, this whole summer that I've been drinking myself to death, I just let all the bills pile up. Hadn't paid any of them. And I'm doing the math on how much I'm going to bill this company for, and it ain't working out in my favor. And I got all these bills due, and I'm going to get kicked out, and now I'm sober. Now I'm not going to have a place to live, and isn't God cruel for getting me sober, and now I'm going to be homeless, and I am friggin' nuts. And by God's grace, I called the old man, and I said, dude, I got to talk to you. And I started frantically telling him all this, because he's like, what happened? You were great a few hours ago. What happened? So I told him the story, and he says, okay, I get it. He said, John, do you have a dollar? I said, yes, I have a dollar. He said, great. I'm going to hang up now. And when I hang up, I need you to hit your knees, say a prayer, get your big book, get your dollar, and you get down to 24-hour club or Homeward Bound, get you a Coke or something, and you talk to every guy you can find at those treatment centers or halfway houses. Stay there for a couple hours. Call me when you get home. Lit. And I'm thinking, not only is he old, he's deaf, because I'm about to be homeless. I hit my knees. I said a prayer. I got a big gulp. Went up to Homeward Bound. The guys came out for a smoke break. I started talking to the guys. Gave out a little more red books. They went back in. I just stayed there reading my big book. They came back out. I stayed there for like 3.5 hours. I don't think my car wheels touched the ground on the way home. You know what I mean? And I get back home, and he's like, how'd it go, dude? And I'm like, dude, you're not going to believe it. I talked to Albert. This, blah, 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 just going on and on and on and on. On fire. He says, what about that job? Well, hell, I didn't think about the job. He said, there you have it, dude. He goes, those poor people should have fired you a long time ago. But you don't have to drink today. And I'm like, I'm cool with that. And I got up the next day. Now, your results may vary, but I got up the next day, presented them with my invoice. They didn't ding me any money. Matter of fact, they hired me back on full-time with a promotion. Or I could have just freaked out on, get sucked into fear on Sunday by myself and drink myself to death. I made my first amends to those people. And like I said, my life is changing. One of my biggest amends was to my first biggest amends was to my Santa Mama. I mean, I was her baby. She had me when she was a baby, basically. Like she says, we grew up together, you know? And I've lied to her. I've cheated her. I've stolen from her business. I've stolen from her purse. I have sucked in my family numerous times over the years. My family, my immediate family, has hit their all-time lows as a family, as a direct result of my alcoholism, and they don't drink. Now, during this couple of weeks period that has gone by, every time I'm talking to her, she says, well, you sound good. You sound different. So I'm like 2 weeks sober, 3 weeks sober, and I'm like, Cliff, I got to take care of this one. I mean, I've wrecked all her. I mean, if she could have said, you owe me $400,000, I'd be like, can we pay that out? You know? But I went over to Cliff's house. We prayed about it. We got the amends all in order. I made the appointment with my mom. I drove up to her house in Gainesville. It was on a Saturday morning. She's sitting on the front porch as I pull up to the driveway, on the, drinking a cup of coffee. I say another mini prayer, and I get out of my car, and I'm walking up the sidewalk. She's walking towards me, and now she's crying. You know, I'm thinking I ran over the dog or something. I'm like, what, you know? And so I give her a hug, and I said, why are you crying? And she stopped hugging me, and she says, because you're different. As soon as I saw your face, I knew you were changed. And we sat down on the front porch. She was holding my hand, and I start to make this amends, and she's crying, and she said, stop. You don't owe me anything. I just wanted you back. Now, evil John Kelly's thinking, ha-ha, I'm getting off easy. And then she hits me with the mother of all amends. She says, I don't know what you cats in Dallas are doing, but whatever it is, I want you to keep doing it because it makes me happy. So if my mama turns 100 years old, I better be 83 and a half, kicking butt, taking names because it makes her happy. And I've since then, my family has come back to me. I've got 14 little nephews and nieces. I'm cool Uncle John, and I get to experience their lives. Right? I get to be a part of my family again. You know, some of us, it takes a long time. My family came back. I've taken my mom through the big book. She don't drink. My mom's the lady in Walmart or Target that some sad sack behind her is going to tell, bear their life story to my mom. My mom, for the first few years I was sober, she's like passing out Chris Raymer CDs left and right, or Myers, you know. Every time I go visit her, she goes, I need you to burn 10 Peter Marinelli's. I need to, you know. And she's like, I had to teach her how to burn CDs because, I mean, like, she's just handing them out like business cards. You know, my brothers are all in the church. They get it. I've done 12-step calls with people in their churches because they run across people like me. Hell, they've been dipping them, dunking them, praying on them, and they're like, well, that ain't, call John. Call my brother in Dallas. He can help, right? It's cool. You know, when I got sober, primary purpose, I mean, if you go to my meeting now on a Tuesday night, I chair that Tuesday meeting. I took over from Myers. And we have anywhere from 150 to 200 people on Tuesday nights. Right? It's big book study all the time. We do another little thing called foundation meeting for newcomers. When I got sober, we were like the scourge of Dallas. Intergroup, whoever was running intergroup, didn't even put us in the intergroup directory back in the day because we're big book dumpers. We study the big book. I'd run into people from my other AA, and they'd say, wow, we heard you died. I'm like, nope, I'm here. Where are you going to group? I say primary purpose, and they're doing like Hail Marys. Oh, sorry. You know? But I started following Myers around, and I can't be Myers Raymer. I just got to be John Kelly. And my buddy Kurt was still sober, and we did that Friday night meeting at Homeward Bound for 15-plus years. And Myers would get all the crusty old farts. Me and Kurt split up the rest. At any given time, I'd have between 5, 10, 15, 20 guys. I'd have them listed on a piece of notebook paper because I'd forget their names. I'm doing step 1, 2, 3, day in, day out, every day. Next thing you know, I'm getting a year chip. I got little knuckleheads that I'm sponsoring. Those guys, in turn, are sponsoring other people. You know? We've got 56 places on our outreach list that we go to as a group every day of the week. 365. We're better than the post office. Hell, rain, sleet, you name it. I've taken guys to detox on Christmas Day. I've taken guys through the steps. I did my first fifth step on Christmas Day, the first Christmas I was sober. I got my first guy to sponsor when I was 28 days sober. He was at Homeward Bound. I said, well, you know, I only have like 20. I'm not even have a month yet. He goes, I just heard you talk. If you can get 28 days, I can get 28 days. I called Cliff. He says, you didn't tell him no, did you? I'm like, well, no, but I just got, read the book. That's why they wrote it. Can't screw it up. And I just started. And the next thing you know, all these things that I was so afraid of, all these amends, I mean, I had people on my amends list. They could have killed me back in the day and got away with it. And God saw fit to repair those relationships. I didn't ever get back together with them. I didn't get the job back or anything like that. But they're not ducking me. I'm not ducking them. God did that. Tom Ivester, if you know him, he's been sober since 57. I got to speak with him a few times. And his way of putting it on our amends is, when faith and preparation collide, the results are what God does. You know, and I started off with my easy amends, and I started going into the middle stuff, and then all of a sudden these ones that I was never, ever going to do, those start getting taken out. And it's a dramatic transformation, just like the big book says. You know? And in sobriety, I've got to do a whole bunch of cool things. I've traveled all over the world. I got little buddies in France and Scotland and Iceland and Denmark, all this stuff, and I'm just an idiot drunk. You know? I'm no better than anybody here. I'm just a drunk left to my own devices. And my job is to show God that I'm grateful. And how do I do that? By trying to help somebody. And like I say, I get to be free. I got a little 7-year-old boy back in Dallas. I didn't know we had a bounce house here. I would have brought him. But I never would have had that. Never. You know? I'm so eternally grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just love doing what I do. You know, on Sundays, if you're ever in Dallas, it's Sundays at 6 o'clock. We are at the 24-hour club. It's Big Book Study at 6 o'clock. I've been doing that meeting for like 16 years. It's now the world famous because we have people come to my group from all over the world. And people in Europe will actually schedule a vacation, come to Dallas, and hang with us for like a week or 10 days and just go 12-stepping with us. And then one of the places they got to go is 24-hour club, you know, and it's a little dump, you know, but it's little busted up fried pies just like me and just like you that are, they need a way out, you know, and that's what we do. I'm going to end it with this. Check this out. So we did that third step prayer on 63. There's some good promises in the 10th step. The bottom of page 84 says, and we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For this time, sanity will have been removed. So the hope of step two has come true. I've taken the steps. I've had this spiritual experience. This has happened to me. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from as we're a hot flame. I've had some thoughts over there. I remember early on, I couldn't make it to the meeting on a Saturday night. It was in the fall, so it got dark early, and I had to get gas. So I stopped. I was pumping gas. And it was just random. I looked at my watch, and it was like 8:45, and I had the thought of, I'll ask the liquor store. That's how I lived forever, man. And I'm like, dude, I said a prayer. I called my sponsor. The thought, you know what I'm saying? It says, we'll see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it, right? I didn't do it. I just worked the steps. I've had a spiritual experience. God does what he does, right? It says, we're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. I got treatment centers, probably not this one, so don't take offense, but I got treatment centers for me, 1 through 5, that are telling me to lay out my trigger list, right? Can't hang around these people, don't go around these people. Got to do this, my little trigger list, to avoid temptation. Well, let's think about some stuff in the big book. Bill Wilson stops into a cafe to use the telephone and ends up drunk. Cafes and telephones on his trigger list. Jim, the car salesman, stops at a roadside cafe and has some sandwiches and milk and ends up drunk. Sandwiches and milk on his trigger list. The coup de grace is Fred, the accountant, at the end of a perfect day, crosses the threshold of a dining room and ends up drunk. Doorways on Fred's trigger list. I go anywhere on God's green earth and I don't think about drinking. I don't think about not drinking. It doesn't exist. It's been removed. That is a recovered alcoholic. So if you're sitting here struggling and you've got a million desire chips like I had and you can't get sober, the third step's on 63. I just left off at 84. You just got to answer yourself. Is your life worth doing 22 pages of work? Because that's all it is to get you from the gutter to free. That right there. I got one of those all-in-one remotes, the manual sticker than that, and I had to read the sucker to turn my crap on at home, you know? That's it. That's the work. You know, I spent all those years thinking and pissing and moaning that the worst thing that could ever happen to me was being an alcoholic. Why am I an alcoholic? And by God's grace and this program and little busted drunks all over the world, the worst thing that could have happened to me, being an alcoholic, is transformed into the best thing that did happen to me, being an alcoholic. Thank you very much.
Look, this, I'm gonna send this out to the Reverend right there.